Like to welcome everybody here. The, just a couple of quick announcements. We will have a public comment period a couple times throughout the agenda. During that time, if anybody would like to speak, we'll ask if there is anyone who would like to. You would just say your name, we'll write it down, and give everybody an opportunity to say a few words. If there's enough time, we'll go back through and ask if anyone else would like to say something. There is a copy of the Open Meeting Act here up here at the table. If anybody would like to see that, there's also copies of the agenda in both print and braille. The Open Meeting Act is also in print and braille. Restrooms are out the door to the right, I believe across the main hallway, and then they're on the left?
Right-hand side.
Right-hand side, okay. Hopefully we will be out of here on time. We're scheduled to go until about 12:35. The meeting today will be recorded and will be posted online within a week of the conclusion of this meeting, along with the minutes. Let's see here, any other things in here? Kathy, can you tell us where the announcement for the meeting was published?
The public meeting notice was published on the NCBBI website, Nebraska.gov calendar. It was posted in the Lincoln Journal Star, Omaha World Herald. It was sent to NCBBI Listserv, NFB Newsline, Radio Talking Book Services. It was sent to the ACBN president, the NFBN president, and it was sent out to the NCBBI staff.
Okay. Have we always sent it to Radio Talking Book?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know why I was thinking we didn't, but that's great that we are. Okay, wonderful. So with that, Robert, would you care to run through the agenda real quick?
Yes, sir. All right, so 9 o'clock here. Call to order, welcome and introductions. Announcement concerning public meeting, public comment periods, meeting agenda, Open Meeting Act, proof of publication, recordings, other logistics. 9:10, approval of the July 29 and August 14th public meeting minutes. 9:15, focus topic, changes in the Rehab Act of WIOA. All right, then we get into the quarterly business. 10:15. Report from the Executive Director, 10:45. Budget and Biennium Update, 11:05. Public Comment, 11:20. Break, 11:35. Newsline update, 11:40. Client assistance program, CAP, complaints or issues, 11:45. Anonymous staff suggestion box comments. All right, next, new business, 11:50. Discuss and act upon the revoking the requirement of notice of the of retirement of the executive director. 1205. Yeah, okay. Officers' elections. That was kind of a dot. That was funny. All right. 1215. Public comment. 1230. Typical final announcements. 1235. Adjournment.
Okay. Thank you very much, Robert. A little faux pas on my part. I skipped over introductions. So, again, I'd like to welcome everybody for coming. My name's Mike Hansen. I'm the chairman of the board. I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska, and I represent the interests of the National Federation of the Blind. Let's go around the rest of the board here and everyone else in the room so that we can get everybody's name down for the record for the meeting. Becky.
Sure. Becky Regan, Executive Secretary, Dakota City, Nebraska.
Chad Bell, Board Member, Alliance, Nebraska.
So Robert Newman, Co-Chair here in Nebraska, Omaha. Thanks.
Mark Bolger from Omaha. I'm the American Council of the Blind designee on the Commission Board.
Carlos Servan, Executive Director, NCBVI, Lincoln.
Kathy Stevens, Administrative Assistant for the Commission.
Bill Brown, Business Manager for the Commission.
Carol Jenkins, Deputy Director for Services.
Jimmy Rock, past board member on the Commission Board, past ACB President, whatever other hat I'm wearing, representing John Q. Public as well.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And one more.
Mm-hmm. Nancy Flora.
Welcome. Thank you all for joining us and being here today. With that, we'll move on to the approval of the July 29th minutes. Everyone on the board received an electronic copy of those and had an opportunity to review them. I would entertain a motion to approve the July 29th minutes.
So moved.
Go ahead.
Second.
Right. Somebody needs to make the motion and then somebody needs to approve it, or second it.
You guys got it down
there. Yeah, Mark made the motion.
Okay.
Chad seconded it.
All right. Then so a roll call vote. Chad?
Yes.
Becky?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
And I say yes. For the August 14th meeting, and so we did have just for the record, July 29th was our normally scheduled quarterly board meeting. The August 14th meeting was for the hiring process of the executive director. So That was the reason for the two meetings. So I'd also entertain a motion to approve the August 14th minutes.
I'll approve them.
Second.
Okay. Quick roll call vote. Chad?
Yes.
Becky?
Yes.
Robert?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
And I say yes as well. Okay. And then with that, we would go ahead and move into the focus topic for this month, this meeting, which was the changes in the Rehab Act from WIOA, a topic we've hit on before, but it's ever being defined. So more, we're anxious to hear what else we've learned and what's been decided on and where this is going and how it's going to affect the commission and the services that we offer. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Carlos.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I asked Bob Litton to write the changes, but I will just give a general introduction of it. As you mentioned, we talked about this before, so it's not news. One of the major changes was that we need to spend 15% of our budget on pre-employment transition services, which is something that we always need, provide services to that population. The difficulties after the regulations and some of the interpretation are that they are putting some restrictions on what could be counted towards a pre-employment transition services, not necessarily for VR services. So we are still providing all those services, but are having some difficulties on trying to decide out of those services which ones can be under pre-employment transition services. That was the main focus of WIOA, and some of that is also with, there is more emphasis on working together with the other local board members, which I will mention some of on my report. But with that, I'm going to ask Bob Ditton to talk about the major changes, and I think we usually open to the floor of questions, and it's more interactive than a whole hour talking about the focus topic. So Bob?
Yeah, well, of course, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity replaces the old Workforce Investment Act of 1998. WIOA, actually, I guess we should be using the initials. I understand that WIOA is actually offensive to Native Americans, so that was something we learned this summer, so I need to discipline myself and use the initials more, WIOA. Even though it was enacted in 2014, and here it is, 3.5 years later, it is something that is still evolving. We're still receiving quite a bit of technical assistance in terms of what compliance means, you know, and we're always looking for more clarification and all that. But what I'm trying to do with, for the purposes of this meeting, is to do kind of like a side-by-side comparison. You know, what did the old WIA say, and how does that compare to WIOA today? You know, and so I think the major areas of compliance that we need to be aware of, you know, is what I tried to identify. And you know, to that extent, I tried to indicate what we've been doing so far. You know, some things are still evolving. You know, particularly when you look at the purpose of WIOA itself, as far as building a system involving other agencies. You know, we're looking at a sweeping reorganization and networking of agencies that really kind of work independently of each other before. We are, this since WIOA, we have been working in partnership with several other agencies as far as the development of a unified, well, actually they call it combined big plan. There is a difference between unified and combined big plan. And our part of it is called the VR portion of that plan. But there are many, many areas in which we are supposed to be working together as far as serving each other. Clients in the workforce system. So that's kind of a broad type of thing, you know, and the items I identified in this document are really kind of, it doesn't go into a great deal of definition or detail as far as all of the various types of areas in which we have to combine, but it does give broad strokes, I think, which I think is what we're trying to do here. So with that, I will entertain any questions you might have.
Well, I'll start, Robert. First of all, thank you for the before and after kind of outline that you had prepared. I read it last night again and thought it was very, very helpful to me to understand, you know, what the changes are. And, so I thought you did a great job kind of summarizing that. So I appreciate that. I guess the one that, the first one that I was had some interest in or concerned about was the whole competitive employment, integrated employment, and I don't know if you specifically said anything about segregated employment, but you know, we here in Omaha we have Outlook Nebraska. It's one of the larger employers of blind people in the Midwest, and I guess I would call that segregated employment. And what is the future for them? I know how will WIOA, workforce WIOA affect that?
It has already made an effect. College, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Carol. But, you know, prior to WIOA, we have been categorizing placement at Outlook Devices as a successful outcome, you know, a successful employment outcome. However, with WIOA, the definition has changed now so that not only competitive employment requiring payment of at least minimum wage or higher, it also requires that the placement be integrated, you know. And Outlook Nebraska definitely pays minimum wage and higher, but it's not integrated, so it doesn't meet the definition. In the law, the definition for competitive employment was changed. It's competitive integrated employment now. So those kind of situations might pay minimum wage or higher are not integrated if the majority of the of the group working in that situation are people with disabilities. So people may choose to work at Outlook Nebraska, and that's fine, but that will not be considered a successful outcome.
And then in turn, we don't get reimbursed from Social Security for that, right?
We could.
Oh, it's still good?
Yeah, because Social Security doesn't care about the definition. What they care is whether or not they are off benefits.
Oh, okay.
But when we put what is a goal, it needs to be a goal according to the Rehab Act or WIOA definition. Does that answer your question, Mark?
Yeah, I'm just kind of thinking, as I understand the WIOA, it's there's really a big emphasis on integrating people into people with disabilities into the society and into the workplace, and I don't know, is there any far-reaching impact that the WIOA will have on the Ability One program, or are they completely separate? Because I know Ability One, how I understand it is they give preference for any products that the federal government purchased, so they don't have to be low-cost producer. And I was just wondering if I know you don't have a crystal ball, but how will that affect them long term? Will they be able to coexist to segregated employment and WIOA, or is the goal to kind of phase out the Ability One program? So I know you probably can't answer that, but that'd be my concern. I mean, if we're truly integrating employment, wouldn't that kind of force the sheltered workshops out and segregated employment?
I do know that there are several, many Shelton workshops will be closing over the next few years, you know, but not all, you know. I guess to some extent it depends on how many are employing people using the subminimum wage certificate. If you're an agency, if you're a community rehab center, and most or all of your employees are earning at least minimum wage, that probably isn't going to have much of an effect, you know. So it wouldn't put you in that much of a bind as far as your operating overhead cost if you're having to make that kind of adjustment. As far as I'm aware of, I don't believe Outlook Nebraska employs anybody at some minimum wage level. I wouldn't think that it would make much difference. And as far as the Ability One programs, I have not seen any discussion about any effect as far as federal funding or anything for those programs because of WIOA.
Well, I guess as just a person, I think all work is good. And even though that working at Outlook Nebraska would be considered an unsuccessful closure, will the commission be able to help with any work accommodations or training to support that kind of employment?
Technically, we cannot. Because again, we are mandated to use our funds to clients with the goals they tell us. But we don't hide the fact that there is Outlook Nebraska. The blindness community is closed, the consumer organization. So we talk about that. And if somebody wants to go there, yeah, we will give them a tour, and it's up to them.
Well, I appreciate that because, you know, the people that work there seem to, they appreciate the opportunity to earn a meaningful employment. Probably for a lot of them, they don't understand recognize the legal terms of integrated or segregated employment. They're just glad that they got a place to work. So,
yep.
And I think they make a good product. It's a good place to work. So I hope we can coexist and support them. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, thanks for asking that question.
Sure, I was just going to say, and I guess some of the documentation that we received and read getting ready for this meeting, which of course will be on the website ready for anyone to read, is I like to put some of the new rules essentially have asked us to do and how it's affected some of, brought in some more positive things to some of our programs, because we have some really positive programs that were beyond what the law down through the decades, you know, had laid out. We were always kind of at the cutting edge and always ahead of most people in terms of programs for youth, you know, some of our summer programs, employment programs, the Winter Fest, where they're getting into social things, employment things, even more so. I just like, again, I just really appreciated, really enjoyed reading that document where it was some of the new innovations that have come into these programs have occurred. So that's, you know, something I'm not sure you're going to talk about, that angle of some of the changes have brought about in our programs that we've got going. Because, Carlos, I think in your report, you reported some of it. But the report we got from Shane Burrish was really great.
Yeah, I asked him to put that together because I thought you guys wanted to see that.
Oh, yeah.
The difference, yeah. So that's why I sent it as a separate document, too, because it focused only on transition.
Yeah, so I don't know if any of that was going to be brought out here.
Well, that's why I sent it, so it could be part of. But it wasn't part of the focus topic. I could, if there is time, I'm sure, so we can talk about that, too.
Well, it seems like there's a little bit of time for right here. Unless there were other things that brought up real kind of similar to what Mark was talking about.
True. Well, you all wrote I mean, read the documents, except maybe the part of the audience. In general, we were doing several programs that other states were not. In fact, when we talked to other states about that several years ago, like wages, PI, but PI is not in the pre-ed age range, but winner phase, the skills training on the weekends that the districts did, they just thought that we were pushing the envelope, but we knew all the time that as early as you invest, the better it is. Several of our successful closures, the most successful one, are those who participated on those transition programs. So when WIOA and the regulations came out, we were prepared. A lot of those things we were already doing. And other states didn't know how to put those things together because they never did it before. So for us, it was easier. Okay, in fact, they wanted us to invest more money. I used to talk to some consumers about, I see this as a new challenge because now we need to spend more money on what we are doing. But of course, there are some restrictions too on what are those things that you are doing. So one of the things that we started to add was the technology training. We thought, okay, let's purchase technology. We took a risk because there were some comments from the federal government that said, well, if you teach adaptive technology, yes, that is counted towards pre-ed time and funds. But if you purchase the equipment, it's not. Well, back then I told them, put it in writing and we will do it, but they didn't, so we just purchased the equipment. Now, we were not doing anything illegal because if they told us you could not count that towards pre-ed, of course we wouldn't count it, but under the VR services, we could. Okay, so we were not doing anything illegal. It was just a matter of in which funds we were going to put the money. And then recently, well, maybe the last 4 months or so, after several agencies push RSA, they say that adaptive technology, the equipment itself, is counted towards that. So that was something nice to hear. But we're still having some problems. It's counting transportation time and also room and board for some of our programs, like Winner Fest, even sending folks to conventions. Okay, we could pay the banquet, the registration. We could also pay again the room and board, but that wouldn't be counted towards pre-ed. Mm-hmm. And that's their interpretation, because what they say is room and board and transportation should not be counted. It's not direct services according to them. So what we say when we provide some of the meals, well, they are learning social skills, how to eat in public, how to get their own food. If that's the case, yes, but still, the room portion is tricky. What some states propose, and that's why we are maybe going to move into that, is that subcontract with other entities to run some of our programs, and that we will be monitoring how they do it, and they charge for those programs. So it's like a tuition fee. And again, all of this is exploratory, okay? Mm-hmm. A tuition fee, which includes all the expenses, they don't have to separate room and board. This is what it counts to send pre-ed students to the ACP and NABA State Convention, mm-hmm. or something to that effect. So we pay for that, and RSA will be okay with that. Mm-hmm. So we're exploring that. Some states are working on that. That will be one of the topics, I think, also at the NCSA FALS conference. I have a conference call with a couple of directors, and they think that's the way to go. Now, the current RSA, she's not the commissioner, she's like the interim commissioner. She is a lawyer, very conservative, and she's saying that if people abuse, if agencies abuse that approach, they might say no, because they don't want to see a lot of money spent on transportation, room and board, when there are no direct services. So we will see what happens there. But that's one of the areas where we are still having problems. So going back to the technology area, one of the innovative things that we also did, which we were ahead of other agencies across the country, was invite parents and teachers from the public schools. And we pay for all of that. And that's part of the 9 authorized services as well. So that was a big expenditure, but I think was very successful.
There's no dispute. When you say there's questions about what is covered, is that in reference to the 15% mandate? We can still spend the money, it's just not part of that 15%,
correct.
Right?
So, correct.
And as I kind of taken a step back, I think most people would recognize that when we invest in the youth,
mm-hmm.
they're the more likely ones to become gainfully employed.
Exactly.
So as long as we can still spend the money out of the other 85%, right? For the
correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So that's not going to be an issue. We just got to make sure we utilize the 15% under the authorized.
Exactly. However, and Bill, I'm sure, is going to raise his hand if I don't mention this.
Yeah.
or speak aloud. Because of those expenditures, then there's less money for the other services.
Absolutely.
For the other population.
Absolutely.
One of the other aspects too is that because of we needed to spend more time and money on that area, the pre-ed, our folks were not spending enough time doing placements.
Absolutely.
So having a contract with an entity that will run those programs will help our counselors to go back to do placements. So again, it's all of that we're exploring, we're thinking about that. And we feel confident that we're going to come up with something good.
Well, you mentioned, I don't mean to dominate, but you mentioned placement is, as I understand, WIOA, it really is all about creating people that are prepared for employment.
Correct.
And how is that going to impact, you know, as blind people, we not only have to find employment, but we also have to develop new and alternative skills. How do you balance, you know, preparing blind people to be blind and also find them employment? I'm going to give you an example like the Center for the Blind. That's primarily, as I see it, preparing people to be successful blind people.
Correct.
But it's not necessarily a career track that says, okay, when you go to the center, we are preparing you for a specific job, is it? And what I think needs to happen is someone's blind or new to blindness, they need to kind of make a career choice right away, and then all their efforts need to be getting them prepared and into the work environment. And so I'm not quite sure how that affects, like, you know, O&M training and the center, you know, it's all about jobs now, as I understand it. It's not so much about, you know, independent living.
Well, we always had like 90% of our budget, maybe a little bit more, 90-point-something% of our budget for jobs.
Right.
So it was always about jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Many agencies found ways to like count homemakers,
mm-hmm.
or successful closure, or unpaid family members. So the federal government became, I wouldn't say smarter, but just tougher to say, okay, you're not counting this anymore.
Right.
Because they were not really doing what the spirit of the law said. But in Nebraska, we were, especially the last 18 or 19 years, focusing a lot on jobs, because yes, we used to do a lot of homemakers and spend a lot of time and money on services for older blind when the money wasn't for that. Okay, so we needed to make drastic changes, and of course many people were unhappy. So we were working a lot on placement back then. So to answer your question about training, in order for a blind person, either growing up blind or becoming blind, and I'm one of them who became blind later and have a lot of friends that way too, in order for us to be successful either in a school or a job, we need to master the skills to be independent and successful. So in my case, I'm totally blind, and in case of most people, they cannot function well without the alternative. They need to get a training before they focus on that employment hunting. I wouldn't be able to go to law school and do well if I didn't get a training. So training is first and has to be a good training. And the training is not just here to can travel, to can do it, but constantly say you can do it, there are ways that you can do that. Our teachers are also counselors. They are already checking the pulse of the client, seeing what kind of strengths they have, so they can recommend the counselors, the field counselors in this case, what else they can do on the field when they graduate from the center. So I think that's a short answer that I can give you because, I can see a lot of other agencies. Well, I'm going to use the sister VR agency here. They do quick placements and nothing wrong with that. It's just different than what we do. They are going to get into order of selection. And of course it's going to be more difficult for them because now they need to invest more time, money, and efforts on training that population. We are always thinking and doing training first. Now our challenge, like I mentioned a few times also, is folks who are blind and also with multiple disabilities. And we are already, for the last few years, training our staff members to understand that that's the population we have. So in addition to blind skills, our counselors need to understand how to work with other disabilities.
This is Becky. I totally agree with that because it can be overwhelming to a person, I would assume. And if you throw too many things out at one time, it's going to cause things to be unsuccessful as well. So I agree with first of all, having the person accept their blindness, and then move towards, okay, so what can I do now that I have accepted that I'm blind? Now what's next? But I think if you throw it all in at one time, that it's going to cause more problems than if you take it step by step and progressively work towards employment.
And there are different clients. Like I say, I'm totally blind, but there are other folks who have some good functional vision, and all of a sudden they realize, I'm legally blind, I need your services, or functionally blind. Well, sometimes small accommodations help them, and they're either placed or retain their jobs right away without needing a lot of alternative techniques. In some situations, they don't want more training, they just want some equipment, but then they lose vision, motor vision, and they are not competent. So then they realize they had to get the complete training. So we have a variety of clients, and the services that we provide are individualized. Yes, we talk a lot about training, but actually most of our clients don't come to the center training. Mm-hmm. That's an example. Yeah.
Carlos?
Yes, sir.
On the document that I believe that Bob put together on major changes brought by the WIOA, it talks about some of the different types of services that we provide, and one of them is job exploration counseling. And I realize that this is something that we've always done.
Correct.
We've always, you know, worked with people. You know, what are your interests? You know, help guide, not really guide them, but help them through the process of discovering for themselves what their interests are and where they would be successful and to go and make a career. Has that changed at all in how we're providing those with WIOA? The fact that it was listed at all was just surprised me a little bit. So.
Exactly. That's the point I made about we were doing that for a while already.
Yeah.
Now the only challenge is documenting those things, because they want documentation that we are doing that.
Okay.
In that particular area. It's interesting you're asking that question because I just got an email yesterday from, it's called the government agency, no, government accountability office. It's an entity charged by Congress to survey state agencies, and in this case, asking questions about WIOA implementations. And that question that you ask is one of them, whether or not that service increase is the same or decrease since implementation of WIOA. I spent like 2 hours answering a lot of their questions and not even halfway yet. But it's interesting that they are asking things that we're already doing. So. But there will be questions there too. Like one of the questions is, has RSA been helpful on giving you guidance? And I said, no, right? They haven't.
Another question that I had was the document that that Shane Burrish put together, uh-huh. talking about the pre-ITS programs and so on. And a lot, again, you know, a lot of them are ones that we've offered for years, the wages and PI, and, not, I'm sorry, not PI, but Winterfest and so on. And I know we've done local office training programs. One that stood out in here, though, that I guess I didn't realize was going on, might be an oversight on my part, but it caught my eye, was a parent group that's now called the Parent Network.
Yes.
And I guess I did not realize that was going on. I think that's excellent. And is that primarily happening in Omaha, or is that happening in all the offices? It sounds like they're trying to set up a telephone call now to include more people from around the state.
Correct. It started in Omaha. Tim Jefferson is leading that. Is Nancy Flero back?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. I'm sure she can talk more about that. My understanding is that we want, well, it's available, and the idea is that it's going to be statewide. But at this point, it still is in the Omaha area. Well, can you help me with that, Nancy?
Yeah, they meet quarterly, and we started out here in Omaha, and we wanted to open that up to other offices. And even if each of the districts do it, it becomes really hard logistically, you know, just because we're such a rural geographic state. So we've opened it up for parents to call in and take part in that. And we have had that. I think that the last one, the last meeting, we actually had Easter Sills come in and talk about benefits planning. And then on November 17th, they have Disability Rights Nebraska. They're going to have a representative from the state talking about ADA and the Parent Training Information Center, just about advocacy.
Now, because it is for parents of pre-ITS eligible aged children, I mean it's for all parents, but I mean they would certainly fall in, pre-ITS parents certainly would fall into that. Is that something that any of the costs associated with that, maybe for conference call bridges and things like that can be classified as pre-ITS funds or be in the pre-ITS category when for funding?
We haven't think about that. The conference call, we haven't think about that. Are we charging down into that bill, do you know?
No, we haven't been charging the actual calls, no.
I mean, I can't think of what other costs they would be for that type of a program at this point, so that was the only one I could think of. But yeah. Other than time, for the staff time, because it sounds like there's a person
team, yeah.
that helps lead the discussions from our staff. Is that true, Nancy?
Tim Jefferson has been coordinating that.
Okay.
See, one of the areas that I would like to highlight too is that they're telling us, RSA is telling us, that we need to fulfill the 5 required areas before we could do the other 9 authorized areas. we were doing all of them. And the problem was, okay, how do we document or prove to them that we are reaching as many pre-ed students for the 5 required areas before we start doing the 9 required areas, because that's part of the mandate. They want us to do that. And Carol and I think Nancy and Shane are working on a document that we got also from the Technical Assistance Centers. It's called TAC, TAC, and they are putting together that. It's a very good document, so we are going to start doing that now. Another difference that we have with other agencies is that there is something called potentially eligible, meaning they don't have to be eligible. For us, they have to be functionally blind or legally blind, but there are a lot of students who are on special education, and as long as they are on special education with a, they don't even have to have a visual problem for us to consider them potentially eligible. We could serve them under pre-ed, but they wouldn't be clients, okay? That's one of the main reasons why there are some of that limitations about transportation, room and board. But in our case, we were already making them clients. So RSA themselves has, they are having some hard time understanding how we were ahead of the team, the game already in this case. But those are things that you might be hearing in the future, so I just want you to put it in your ear in case you hear that.
So
potentially eligible.
So Carlos, what would be an example of someone who's maybe not legally blind, functionally blind, that would fit that, you know, the, you know, that little person that you're speaking of? That
well, and that's one of the reasons why we haven't worked on that too hard, because we have something what we mentioned, a functionally blind, and even in our law, state law says having a disease or a condition that will lead to blindness. So if the person has almost, you know, just perfect vision, but they could lead to blindness, we will open them, okay? In general, I think what happened is the public schools, when they have good functional vision, they would not refer those students to us. In this case, we are telling them as long as they are on a special education, we can serve them under pre-ed.
Yeah, a good example might be someone with retinitis pigmentosa, where it's a degenerative disease over time, where they've been diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, they're not legally blind, but the prognosis probably will be.
Right, but according to our state law, we can open them as clients.
You can, okay.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, that, I guess they're being exempted.
Yep, yep.
Well, I was glad to see that, you know, there's a lot of effort being placed on working with the schools and the Nebraska City, and, you know, I think, you know, what the best solution to the best outcome is if we're all putting the interests of the children and the family first, and their long-term needs, and you know, everybody's got to work together for that goal. And I think how that happens is when we have successful outcomes. Well, so I like what I'm seeing there.
Yeah. In general, I think that's the message from the federal government and also our state leaders is, listen, we have a lot of resources that we were wasting because we don't work together.
And that's kind of what it is. It's really
exactly, and the country cannot keep the luxury to waste money anymore. Mm-hmm. We got to work together, put differences aside, say, okay, my philosophy is this, you know, I might be from this political party and you from a different one, but we need to serve children. Okay?
Chad, you have any?
No, perfect point right there at the end of the Carlos.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else
have
any other questions?
I guess I do. I just love this report. Thank you, Bob. You did a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say, too, you know, this WIOA really does present a tremendous opportunity for us. You know, the law requires closer relationships with entities that we've always found some resistance. You know, we're working much closer with schools, and that can only be a benefit down the road. Already we're seeing better relationships resulting from the collaborations that we've had. Also, sweeping changes are changing some of the ways we work with populations that we haven't had much previous experience with. People with developmental disabilities, for example, we can expect to have much greater involvement as we move forward into the future. Each of the three districts already have seen a significant increase in the number of referrals involving people in the shelter workshops and also coming out of the schools with developmental disabilities. So, and that means changing some of the ways in which we work with partners such as supportive employment providers. Mm-hmm. So there are some sweeping changes, but for the most part, I think it means that we're going to be providing a much better service all around, overall, for blind and visually impaired people generally. Thank you.
You had mentioned in the report, I think Bob did, in 2018 there's going to be some indicators that you're going to establish to measure.
Let me say that right now we're in RSA is in the process of collecting data. The result of the, I think there's six indicators, is that right? Six indicators. And these are different from what we had before. You know, basically, the indicators are not only for rehab agencies, but the other core partners in the workforce development system. So, the result of the two-year evaluation period, I believe, will be published in 2018, probably in the summer, from what I understand. That's right. So that'll be our first report card, so to speak.
It's going to be combined performance measure, they call it.
Yes, right.
Because, you know, what I'd like to see is we like to say we have a good agency, and I think in a lot of areas we do, I guess. I want to be able to back it up, you know, say, you know.
Yep.
And these are the indicators we have. Each counselor serves this many, you know, clients. The average length of time to employment is this amount. Amount of money they make is this, you know. But, so have some indicators so that we're, you know, although indicators are just averages, they do indicate, you know, that we are, you know, providing the best possible services comparatively speaking. So I'll be anxious to see those.
Yeah. Right, the performance measures will be a little different or even difficult for you or for the general public to see how we are doing, because they're going to be combined ones. Okay, so even if we don't have any placements, but they are general, and let's say unemployment insurance to have placement, then we all get credit. Okay, but internally we are going to continue doing our indicators. Okay.
This sounds oversimplified, but when you do the right things, the
exactly.
will follow.
Yep. So. That's why we need to document those and come up with something. Yep. I appreciate it.
So I have just one final question on my. So Bob, you said something that just begs a question, and I ask it respectfully. You know, WIOA, you said that. We really shouldn't use the acronym because it's being seen as disrespectful, if that's even the proper word to use.
Right.
So then, what does it mean?
I wish I knew. You know,
guess what?
Pearl Hurt, when she was in Baltimore or Washington at a meeting, that she learned that it was offensive, but. The exact meeting was not shared with the group. So,
yep. If I may ask, back in 1999, when WIA came up, the same comment was made. And I was in that meeting, and a Native American said, and it's not offensive, but it means a private part from, you know, female private part, and that we shouldn't say that.
Oh, okay.
But it was WIA.
Good.
That was the one before. So this, and it's from one of the languages. There are a lot of different nations.
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah.
Right. So the new one, I just heard somebody saying it, but not giving a definition, or it didn't come from a Native American. It was just somebody else. So just to be safe, let's say WIOA.
Sure.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have an easier time saying those letters than I do that word, because I know that's good.
Okay. Well, everyone, thank you very much. I'm sure we'll come back to the topic again in the future, especially as things progress further. We're able to see the indicator, the report card that comes out, and.